Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.
Good morning and welcome to another podcast of Creative Conversation. Today we have a post-conversation from Soul Works artist Michelle am I saying your last name? Delgado?
Yes, correct.
Good morning, how are you?
I am good, Alpha. Thank you for having me here.
And we also have Rose Cannon, and she is one of the co-curators of Soul Works. And she also has Rose Cannon Fine Art Gallery in Evanston. Hi, Rose.
Hello, everybody. Hi there. Hi.
Great. We're going to start the conversation by asking Michelle to give us a trajectory and talk about yourself as an artist.
Yes, sure. Yeah, my name is Michelle Delgado. I'm originally from Senegal, from West Africa. I'm a 100% self-taught painter. I battle in a variety of different media. And art has been part of my life for probably since I was about 17. Yeah, so I moved from the continent. I was about 19. I went to Europe and to pursue art and trying to figure my path. And that led me to a variety of different places in Europe. And also when I land in the States, I start moving around trying to figure it out. And it's been like that since day one. I'm today based in Chicago. I have a studio at the Zuby Art Center where I do my practice, and then I travel in different places around the country to share my work, to show my work, sell my work, and so on and so forth. So that's what I've been doing.
So I'm looking at your bio here, and it's very impressive. You were saying that you're born on the west coast of Africa in Dakar, Senegal?
Yes.
So yes. What was that like living in, and you lived there for how long?
I was born there, and then I left the continent. I was about 19, you know, and so that's how pretty much everything started coming together. I mean, by the age of 14, I was pretty clear. For me, academically, I was not good, so art was really the things I was interested in, and it's been like that from day one. Life over there was pretty much, actually, Africa, Senegal, it's a big shrine. You know, creativity, that's what keeps us alive. If we are not creative to make our food, our bed, the way that we live, it's almost impossible to come through. So I was totally merged inside of that culture in lots of ways. You know, my mom, she was an artist. She was into fashion and textile, and, you know, and also she was a self-taught. So my grandfather was the same thing. So we come from a lineage of people, they all self-taught. I don't know how that worked out, but that's what we did.
All right, great. That's, you know, so that explains the vibrancy in your art. It's almost textile, you know, in its execution. I was looking at some of your images, and that's where it takes me to, the feel of, you know, the whole, you know, textile feel of work. So tell me, what was life like in Paris?
Life in Paris was interesting because I kind of maxed out in the continent, and there was no other ways for me to get through. So I find a way to get to Europe, and then from there on, totally different culture, totally different infrastructure. Everything was really overwhelming and confusing. So from that point on, I went to a very dark path in my life. I was really immersed in drug addiction and art. So that's all I did. And that's all I did. And I think so when I landed to Paris, it was really good because it was a merge of the culture that I came from in something totally, it was familiar, but seeing and being there was really different. Now starting to kind of weave inside of this two culture to find myself. My drug addiction has a lot of interruption of that, but I pursue it. I pursue it the best way that I know. And I'm very grateful my path could lead me to that. And today, it's all behind me. I reconfined my trajectory and my existence, and I'm a dad. I'm very aware to what is my purpose here in life, and I'm very grateful I can embrace that every day. So,
I'm going to, while you're adjusting your headset and going to your speaker, I want to, Rose, to talk to us briefly about her finding you and inviting you into the Soul Works exhibition. If you could just talk on your speaker, Michelle.
So will he be taking his headphones off? Because I can still hear the little bit of interruption.
Yes, please.
Or whatever.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Just
okay.
Talk.
Then I will put it on the speaker.
Great. So, Rose, while he's doing that,
yes,
can you enlighten us about your connection and connecting with Michelle?
Well, I always say it like this. I've been a Basquiat fan from the first moment that I looked at any of Basquiat's artwork online. I have never seen anything Basquiat up in person.
Could you tell us a little bit about Basquiat in case anyone that's listening, we throw that name out and that art style out, but we need to kind of probably educate people.
Oh God, yes. Basquiat was a black artist that he was in the group with Andy Warhol, and he lived in New York, and I think he was Caribbean originally. And I'm pretty sure he was maybe Puerto Rican or Caribbean or something. And Andy, and he was very proficient in, he was doing a lot of tagging, a lot of, the mural work that the young people did at that time. And Andy Warhol, who was in this pop art, big established white community of artists in New York, pulled Basquiat. It loved Basquiat's art and pulled him close into his little group. And he was trying to expose Basquiat to the New York, the very conservative New York art scene, because Andy Warhol was trying to break it open also. And it was very difficult for Basquiat, but he did the work that he was very trying to think of the words, very brilliant, very bright colored work, very abstract, just much, a little bit different, a lot different than Andy Warhol's. But he had a hard time because the art world, the white centered art world was not, they didn't want anybody like Basquiat in that. And so, but Andy Warhol was trying to facilitate his entry into that world, and he was getting rejected everywhere he went, literally. But he pursued and he created a just a a huge collection of art, and he died very early from a drug overdose. But I could understand, with all the pressure that he was under to try to bring forth his art, that he had to have something, basically, in order to sort of, assuage his the rejection that he was feeling. In fact, many of the black artists in this world have suffered that a lot. And as a result, you know, drug abuse or the use of drugs or whatever is a form of self-medicating against all of the depression, the fears, the rejection that we've all suffered in this world.
Right, because there was a modernist,
a black modernist era where a lot of abstract modernist artists of color were not recognized or failed to talk about. And then also black experimentalism is an era of African or black art in America too. So that conversation leads you to meeting Michelle and how you came about. Uh-huh.
Okay. As I was developing the Soul Works show, Fran Joy, who's an artist curator here in Evanston, and I collaborated on this show. We had done portions of it. So Fran and I were sitting down talking about the artists that we wanted to include. And the first artist that I began to collect, his paintings, William Kwaminapo, who was in our Soul Works group and stuff. And so William was in town, and he came to Evanston. We met him at the Evanston Art Center over on Central in Evanston. And William came. He brought his portfolio. He brought all of his books showing what his art was. And we all sat down and looked at it. And with the curators and with the manager of the gallery, and we were very impressed and stuff. And so William said, oh, by the way, Michelle Delgado is down at Joby Gallery down on 35th Street, and you have to go and see his studio. You know, and we were saying, oh, okay, well, maybe we'll get down there because, you know, we're, you know. So, but Kwaminapo stressed that we had to go down and meet Michelle. And so finally, you know, at the end of, you know, we sat down and we had coffee, and he said it several times, you have to go meet Michelle. So we did. Fran and I, Fran had already met Michelle. She already knew him. But we both wanted to see what Joby Gallery was like. And we went down there to his studio, and, you know, then I, you know, his work just mesmerized me. There's something very spiritual about his work, and it just affects you. And I went into his gallery, and I've been, you know, a fan ever since. You know, I had him in the show that we had out here with the Soul Works show at Evanston Art Center, and he was one of the primary artists, along, of course, with you, Alpha. You were in our show also, as well as William Kwaminapo and a number of other artists. So,
great.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers all your questions.
Oh yeah, it did. It did. It talks to us about how we are all so interconnected in terms of, you know, our circles of influence and connection.
Absolutely.
Brought all of us together, you know, and that's how curators work in this time. So you were telling us, Michelle, you were telling us where you left off in Paris, and then now you're here in the United States. And you spent like 8 years in Europe in the art scene, so now you're in the United States. You said you lived in Massachusetts, and you continued your career there. And then you exhibited in the southern region of Florida and Philadelphia. And now you are a Chicago-based artist. And then you said you travel for throughout the country for exhibitions. So tell us about yourself in terms of your touring and how you connect with private collectors, and how are you getting into all of these invitations?
I think that's a good question, because I get inside of this game the wrong way. I'm very private, and I'm very observant, and I don't ask a lot of questions. So I had to rely on that, and that's how I make my work. It comes from the source. I usually listen very early on, and I allow this to guide me into pretty much everything I do. So when I came to this country, what I started doing, I was battling more, in Europe as well, you know, but here it became much more clear. Then I had to find a way to get my name out there. And so I battled in a lot of self-screening, again, self-store completely. And then I was going to the street, and I would sell my print, I would sell my self-screen, I would sell some shirt. People was really gravitating towards that. And attentively, I started meeting people. They saw something bigger than what I wanted to show them. And one time, it was a woman who came from New York. She was really came from nowhere. And then she said, hey, you know, would you mind? I would like to write about you, but I want to come and see your place. I said, oh, no, you cannot come and see my place. And so as we chilled a little bit, I felt I can trust her. And then when I brought her into my environment, she was totally blown away. And because over the year, I had make a lot of work, but I never showed that to the world. So I will participate in a few things here and there, and I will go back to my hole. I knew where I wanted to go with this, and it was just a matter of time. And then also to develop this craftsmanship, then I trying to rely on 100%. So that's what I went that way. So the experiment was very successful. People start taking my shirt, my print to different environment. And I was in South Florida in that time, and I was raising my daughter. And that was one of the biggest focus I had. I wanted to be an incredible dad, which I did, and then trying to merge that with my career as well. And by that time, I totally got clean, and what I always wanted to have was the connection with my ancestor, my spirit, who I am, what am I doing here? And all of those questions lead, again, to a larger body of work. And that's where all of my work come from. And it was not obvious to me, but it was very obvious to other people who observe art, then they like, then they know. And this person has something. I'm not quite understanding it, but I really like it. And so that's how we went on. And I never look back, you know, and that's how I start meeting collector, meeting different gallery. And when I met this Kent gallery, David Kent was another incredible threshold. He understood even better what I was doing than myself. He was able to convey it. He was an incredible writer. And so they pushed the work to Europe, to a lot of variety of different places, and everything just kind of opened up like that. So...
Yes, his work has a magical quality to it. When I first viewed his work down at Joe B. in Chicago, I was just astounded by it. I mean, I had never had that reaction to work before, but it's called when you look at it and something just goes through you. So there's something magical going on here. Michelle has some contact. Higher into the universe and stuff. And when you look at his work, you sort of transport it there. A great compliment was paid to him by one of the Evanston. They're the art group. They're from the city of Evanston, and one of their major artists on this group. When we were walking them around, she was looking at the work and she said, "Oh, those are prints, aren't they?" And I said, "Yes, those particular three that she was looking at of Michelle's were prints." And she says, "Yes, he's better than Basquiat." And for her, she's a renowned artist here in Evanston. For her to say that, you know, I was like, my hair just sort of stood on end, because she got it. She got it immediately. So, and that's the kind of effect that Michelle's work has on people that view it. In fact, one of my neighbors here knocked on my door and said, you know, I went to see your show over at the Evanston Art Center. He said, but the guy that was exhibiting, he knew exactly where Michelle's stuff was positioned. He said, that's the stuff. I really, really like that. He said, but I know I can't afford that. But that was one of the nicest compliments that someone paid to me about our show that we mounted over there. So.
Yes, to lead with what Rose says, you know, when you do what I do, I never kind of, you know, look for any sense of gratification. I mean, back in Africa, in Senegal, my artistic practice I was curious about it, but I was very fortunately in that time. I had met three guys. They were big. They were very out there. And those cats, they were older than me. And I went and I hang out with them. And I stumbled into this place by accident and what they were doing. And these, they were not painters. They were stage artists. They were philosophers. They were healers. They were highly intelligent, extremely brutally honest. And they never compromised anything about what you do, either in a positive or in a bad way. So it's been like that. You're left alone, you do whatever, feel your soul, and then we'll see where that will take you. But one thing, she was clear, that was one of the biggest masterpieces I ever encountered. And this cat, they were not playing. They were not here for sympathy. They were totally marginalized. They were just like totally out of their mind. And I really love that. And I follow them like a dog. And that kind of lead me to something was really larger than me, and it was trying to embed it in me unconsciously or consciously. And that's how I kind of arrived to this place, you know, and they made it very clear. I met one of them. He was a stage artist, and he told me, Michelle, you know, one time I happened to show him some of my work, and he was like, ah, this is bad. This is terrible. 6 months later, I went to see him. I show him the work. He opened the booklet that I have and he said, whoa, this is it. If you explore this type of work for the rest of your life, you will always have something to talk about. And I understood that today. You know, that was the work he came through me more fluidly. He was no expression of an identity or of a race. He was just, tell me who you are in your spiritual world. Tell me. And those work, those are the one that I went after. So I never had any better school of training than anything of those words. They were very confusing, but very real. And so for me, that's something I treasure every day. You know, they were not here to pet me, to make me feel good. You know, they will make it very clear, you know, if you follow this path, you won't be popular, but you'll always be real. And so I had to figure the way how to elevate that craft. And then I did it in a very successful way.
And that led you to be able to have your work featured in 2014 in the Fox Television Network series Empire. Alongside
yes.
the work by Kahinde Wiley?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it came in a very interesting way. These things happen in Atlanta. I was doing a show there, and the fashion designer of the first pilot showed me, and then we met in this very remote park and by accident. And she really gravitated towards my exhibit, and she was just walking, and then we bump, and then we start talking. She said, let me read your bio. I said, go in. And then she went there, and we become a very close friend. She supported my work. She said, you know, one day I will do something very special for you, and she disappeared. And after she disappeared, we stayed in contact. And then we were talking, and then I really liked what she did. She really liked what I did. And one day I was on the road to go to Portland, and Fox called me, one of the people who works for Empire, and told me the project. They wanted something, this and that. And I say, hey, listen, I'm not interested. You know, if you want to buy work, I will sell you work, but that's it. She said, no, don't get off the phone. Let's talk about these things because this can be really cool for you. I say, yo, you guys are always trying to get some feather for me for free. She said, no, this kind of leads you to some really cool stuff. And I kind of chill down and I listen to her. I call Rita McGee, that's her name, the fashion designer. And she told me, Michelle, stay on top of this. You do your thing. And I did. I listened to her. And that was the first time I came to Chicago as an experiment. I went and meet them. I showed them my portfolio. They were really happy, the work. Because Rita told them, they asked Rita, you know an artist alive who will be interesting for this set that we're trying to build? And she gave them my connection, and that's how that went about. And they pick up about three pieces from my collection, and they were able to bring me to the center stage of Terrence Howard's home in the film. That's how that went about.
Well, congratulations on that, because a lot of artists here where I am, the Brownsville Artist Loft, Gallery Guichard, a lot of artists are featured through the gallery and the Empire exhibit as well. So that was a big thing for and a big boost for, you know, African-American artists or artists of color to be featured, you know, that way. We have like maybe 3 minutes left, and I did have an investigation question I wanted to ask you because this is all part of pop-up research. What responsibility artists have to display their times in their art? And the second part of that is, how do artists impact their environment and contribute to the overall vitality of a city?
Yes, that's a good question. I mean, I think for me, the work that I try to convey, it's pretty much about elevating the quality of our intelligence in every level, you know, in every level, spiritual level, race level. And if we can get to that, you know, that's a success to me. You know, everybody arrived to that. We are all in a different places, the things that we like, the things that we interest. But the elevation of, like, you know, intelligence, meaning spiritual intelligence, emotional intelligence, curiosity intelligence, all of those things would always lead you to a very high gratification of oneself. And that's very important. If art can do that, anything, black or white, there is no stopping you. And that's very important for me. This is not a gimmick kind of execution. It is about real. You know, so I'm just following what my ancestor inspired me, and I'm trying to do the same thing in this reality.
And your work, thank you so much for that. Good answer. So what, how can people get in touch with you? You said you're at the...
The Zuby Arts Center, and the people can get in touch with me through my website, which is very simple. It's michelledelgado.com. And from there, they all variety of different features on Instagram and all of that. People can get it from there.
And I feature Michelle. I feature Michelle on my Facebook, too. I have a Canon Fine Art Gallery on Facebook, and Michelle is one of the artists that I feature there. So, yes.
And his work can also be found on the Edison Art Center webpage.
Absolutely.
Under... you know, Edison Connect?
And I'm getting ready to put his work on the other Edison group.
Brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network.
Thank you both for participating in the discussion today.
The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how
Thank
art
you,
transform
Alpha.
The city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.